speech, mannerisms, gestures, every part of a person could be imitated to a near ridiculous degree. They were so good at it that they had once been widespread enough to make up roughly 5 to 10% of any given settlement's population. But that had been a long time ago. Once scribes had become commonplace and appraisal checks were the norm, it became harder and harder for them to live quiet, uninterrupted lives. The enlightened races of the world couldn't just turn a blind eye to them either, as a fetus had to be murdered in order for a doppelganger to be born. Additionally, they generally had no regard for sentient lives other than their own, gladly employing murder as a means of furthering their goals. The tensions had eventually led to decades of open hostilities, a turbulent period that history now referred to as the Silent Rebellion. It had been one of the few times when the disparate races of Terrania had set aside their differences to purge the world of the shape-shifting menace. Though the specifics had since been lost to the ages, the fact that doppelgangers were now practically extinct made it clear which side had won. Not to mention the various anti-shapeshifter practices that survived even into the modern day. While not as rigorous as they had once been, appraisal checks to verify one's identity were still widespread, and scribes were heavily regulated, requiring thorough background checks and various magical safeguards before the job could be passed on to new applicants. For example, all scribes were required to undergo a biannual shock test, as lightning was the bane of pretty much every shapeshifting monster in existence. A powerful electric current would not only cause them severe damage, but also paralyze and force them to revert to their base form. Boxy had experienced firsthand electricity's devastating effects, and personally felt that such a weakness was not only unfair, but entirely unwarranted. Its perspective was, of course, an entirely skewed and biased one, as civilization would have been unable to flourish as well as it had if the world's monsters had no weaknesses to exploit. The beasts had greater strength, speed, and endurance, meaning that the enlightened had to use their wits and intelligence above all. Information and knowledge were their greatest weapons, which was why the Silent Rebellion could only have ended one way. As cunning as doppelgangers were, they had ultimately been no match for the combined efforts of multiple civilizations. Granted, people's wariness of doppelgangers had diminished greatly since the days of the Silent Rebellion, but the threat was always at the back of people's minds. Every now and then, tales of a shapeshifter being discovered would circulate, often resulting in citywide appraisal sweeps. The checks rarely turned up anything, as doppelgangers were rare and the few that remained would readily abandon their fake identities and run away in order to avoid being discovered. At any rate, they would never again be able to infiltrate civilization in any meaningful way, as it would be impossible to avoid appraisals forever. Unless, of course, one happened to be Boxy T. Morningwood. The former mimic was now a hero, and its essence concealment skill allowed it to deceive the mandatory examinations. It still had to be wary of electricity, but that would likely be a relatively uncommon problem. There was no danger in nature outside of thunderstorms, and only wizards and shamans were capable of conjuring lightning with magic. Very few magic items were electrically imbued due to its unstable nature, and arclight artificers like Fizzy were a rarity outside of gnomish lands. All things considered, as a weakness, it was deadly but nonetheless manageable. Boxy had therefore decided to seek out magic items that would either provide additional defense against that particular element, or just magic in general. Although it was impossible to completely neutralize a monster's bane, it was sure that at the very least there were ways to dampen its negative effects. And such equipment could be easily obtained so long as it was able to integrate itself into a large enough city. And therein lay the biggest problem, for in order to successfully do so, it had to act and speak in a manner befitting an actual person. Social skills which Boxy still needed to practice. Thus, the former mimic had abandoned its preferred chesty shape in favor of a young elf just on the cusp of manhood. Its disguise appeared to be about 16 or 17 years old, with pale skin, short ginger hair, and bright green eyes. To complete the look, it wore a long, dark red robe with a purple eye insignia on the shoulder and carried an engraved but otherwise plain wooden staff with a gray crystal serving as the head. It had borrowed its new form from one of the adventurers residing in the village of Karan, and had been wearing it ever since its party had happened upon the Imperial Highway. Walking on two legs was uncomfortable and slightly irritating, but Boxy couldn't complain too much. If everything worked out, it would be spending the majority of its time in a humanoid shape anyway, so it was better to get used to it sooner rather than later. As for why, precisely, it had chosen this particular body, that much was simple. Its instincts as both a doppelganger and a mimic had driven it to assume a plain visage that would slip easily from one's memory. The appearance of a snot-nosed youngster, therefore, was more or less perfect for that goal. The forgettable presence would undoubtedly make others ignore the shapeshifter all on their own, allowing it to easily blend into a crowd. It helped that becoming a doppelganger had vastly improved its control over its pigmentation. Otherwise, it would never have been able to replicate its new form so completely. Of course, it hadn't relied solely on its own skewed judgment to determine the adequacy of its disguise. According to Snack, Boxy's new face was so bland and uninteresting that even she reflexively ignored it, while Arms had stated that it looked weak and easy to push around. Fizzy had simply offered a slightly disinterested, "Looks fine to me." Such mediocre reviews meant that it would certainly do very well in avoiding unwanted attention once they had crossed the border. Putting that assumption to the test was why it had continued traveling along the Imperial Highway instead of skulking through the surrounding wilderness. Not only would it allow them to meet and greet fellow travelers, but the shapeshifter could easily eradicate the lot of them with no witnesses should things turn sour. And lo and behold, the quartet of monsters had indeed run into a group of people on this fine afternoon. A fancy-looking horse-drawn carriage was traveling in the opposite direction, presumably headed for the Imperial capital to the southwest. It was large enough to accommodate its 6 passengers with room to spare, with a sizable pile of luggage strapped to the roof. The vehicle's spotless white paint, gold-trimmed roof and windows and official Griffin's Head crest signified its passengers as people of importance to the Empire, which would explain the 20 or so heavily armed mounted knights escorting it. Realizing that these were definitely not people with whom it should be interacting, Boxy employed the smile-and-wave strategy as the carriage was passing by. According to Snack, this was a tried-and-true method for avoiding lingering attention, though she had mostly only said that because her master had yet to kick the habit of constant vapid smiling. As it seemed fixing that would still take some time, she had thought of a way to make it work to their advantage. However, the plan apparently wasn't foolproof. The armed guards, the passengers, the coach driver, and even the horses all gawked, wide-eyed and slack-jawed, at the ginger elf waving merrily at them as they approached. They stared for a good 10 seconds before one of the escorts signaled for the entire convoy to stop some 15 meters from the disguised monster. The man in question had the shiniest helmet and the sharpest-looking spear, so it was safe to assume that he was in charge of the procession.
"Who goes there?" he shouted, adjusting his grip on his weapon. "Identify yourselves at once!"
Boxy wasn't entirely sure what it had done to warrant this kind of aggressive reaction. Its first instinct was to rip the nasty human to shreds and feast on his delicious entrails. But it had to refrain. That would ruin the whole purpose of the training exercise, not to mention that it was wary of angering so many tough-looking opponents.
"Hello, my name is Bo—"
"Not you, Twig!" the man interrupted. "I'm talking about those things over there."
It was only when Boxy looked over its shoulder that it realized its mistake. It wasn't its disguise that was the problem, but the company it kept.
"What's that, pencil dick?"
Cora snapped.
"You want a piece of this? Huh?"
"Ankles, spine, neck,"
Fizzy mumbled, pondering the order in which she would dismantle this rude infidel. After all, Boxy was her god's chosen hero. She could never sit idly by and allow such disrespect.
"Oh, maybe shins, crotch, then skull would be good too."
Zira didn't say anything, instead burying her face in her palms when she arrived at the same conclusion as her master. She felt like an idiot for not recognizing such an obvious flaw in the plan. Looking at it objectively, traveling with a four-armed mountain of muscle, a walking steel statue, and a practically naked buxom beauty would raise suspicion no matter how innocently unassuming her master made itself out to be. Even if she were to disguise herself, the other two simply stood out too much. In her defense, however, she had been busy coming up with ways to get the box-brained buffoon to stuff various things inside her, so her goof was entirely understandable. And anyway, it wasn't as though the situation was entirely unsalvageable. She quickly relayed a few telepathic instructions to Boxy on how best to disperse the tense atmosphere. It was obvious that the knight and the people behind him were nobles, which meant that they were likely self-righteous assholes who wouldn't know left from right without someone to tell them which was which. All her master would have to do was appeal to their own overinflated sense of worth.
"I beg you to forgive my minions, Sir Knight," Boxy said respectfully. "They are rather rude."
The man's gaze returned to the figure before him, with all of his subordinates and passengers following suit.
"Your minions? Is a twerp like you really capable of controlling these things?"
"Your actions have altered the flows of chaos." The same cryptic notification that had heralded Fizzy's unprecedented transformation into a golem flashed inside the shapeshifter's mind. The unexpected and unknown element put the creature on edge, but it succeeded in concealing its unease and forced itself to focus on the conversation.
"Yes, my lord. I may be incompetent, but I can do at least this much. Allow me to demonstrate."
The knight raised an eyebrow questioningly as the apparent elf turned to face the clearly aggressive demon.
"Arms, punch yourself in the face 25 times. No holding back."
"Aw, man,"
Cora whined dejectedly, before proceeding to viciously kick her own ass.
"The rest of you, bow before the brave knight."
Zira and Fizzy prostrated themselves as instructed, and Boxy itself took a knee in order to pander to the knight's obvious ego.
"Huh. At least you know your place, Twig,"
the knight admitted grudgingly.
"It is so, my lord. A lowly creature like me would never dare to presume itself equal to someone as great as yourself. Surely your heroic exploits are beyond anything my feeble self could ever dream of performing."
These were not, of course, its own words, but the pointless flattery Zira was telepathically spoon-feeding it. And her efforts appeared to be working, if the soldier's increasingly arrogant attitude was any indication. He was so full of himself that he didn't even realize that the source of those goosebumps he was feeling weren't coming from the demon currently pounding her own face, but the twig that he had so offhandedly dismissed. After all, while Boxy's present appearance was far less threatening than Mr. Morningwood had been, its Butcher of Humanity perk still put people on edge. It chose to interpret the misunderstanding as a learning experience, as this sort of misdirection was bound to be useful in the future.
"Very well. Since you have shown humility, then I, the gracious Sir Graham Brown, shall spare your worthless life."
"I am grateful for such mercy, my lord,"
the knight sneered.
"If you understand, then step aside, Twig. We have more important things to do than entertain the likes of you."
Boxy stood and, without lifting its gaze, moved to the side of the road to give the carriage plenty of room to pass. The man called Brown signaled the stupefied coachman to resume their journey, while the other knights kept a close watch on the still bowing trio and the fiend continuing to hit herself with enough force to send blood flying everywhere. The well-dressed passengers inside kept gawking at the curious entourage, exchanging unflattering comments in barely hushed whispers. There was also one small boy saying, "I want one," as he pointed shamelessly at Fizzy. A dangerous request, as nobles were known to do exactly as they pleased. Normally, they would not hesitate to attempt to take the steel golem by force just to spoil their child, which would undoubtedly result in Boxy ripping them apart to feast on their rotten heads. Thankfully for everyone involved, the monster's unsettling presence appeared to be keeping any selfish inclinations in check. Several minutes passed before the convoy was out of sight, and Boxy silently resumed its trek.
Boxy?
Fizzy spoke up.
"Are you sure you want to just let them go?"
"I am."
"Why?"
"The humans on the horses would be tricky to kill. The armor stinks of magic, and there were a lot of them."
Even if it didn't know their levels, the enchanted gear alone would have made them difficult to bring down.
"We could always stalk them and smash their heads in their sleep,"
the golem suggested.
"No need to risk it."
But, they disrespected you."
"So?"
"So? Aren't you angry? I'm fuming over here."
And that was putting it mildly. The pint-sized paladin was practically raring to go on a one-woman crusade right about now.
I'm sure we can crush those guys with ease,
she kept insisting.
The soldiers, maybe. But that guy in the carriage was dangerous.
Guy? What guy?
Master is probably referring to the man with the black beard and the pointy hat,
Zira chimed in.
He may have looked frail, but he was definitely someone well-versed in magic. Likely a warlock himself, given the scrutiny with which he was looking at me and the knucklehead. That's not an opponent we can ignore while trying to handle so many tin soldiers.
What she said, Boxy confirmed. You should avoid fighting large groups of people if you can't take out the magic users first. Like when we first faced Nasty in that tower.
I see. I guess I shouldn't just leap into things just because I have a steel body,
Fizzy lamented.
Going to need to work hard on controlling my violent side.
Risk-reward assessment was a vital part of intelligent fighting, as some battles were simply not worth the effort and were better off avoided. Boxy had no doubt that this was precisely such a case. The last thing it needed was to get on the bad side of yet another human who might turn out to be a monster in his own right. Which wasn't to say that it didn't have doubts regarding its decision. Those people had looked wealthy, and wealth meant shinies, which in turn meant happiness for Boxy. However, it wouldn't be able to enjoy any of that if it was dead, and therefore letting the carriage go had been both the right decision and an easy one. The flows of chaos have returned to their default causal state. Its hero skill had even ceased whatever it had been doing, reinforcing the shapeshifter's theory that it had made the right call. It was, however, still underestimating just how significant even the tiniest action could prove to be. Part 3. A cheap carriage rattled along the cobblestone highway. Unlike the fancy gilded stagecoach that Boxy had encountered the day before, this was a simple, unpainted wagon with a piece of canvas stretched over its contents. Pulling it along were two green-furred creatures resembling oversized anteaters, easily the size of donkeys, though the creatures known as lime ticks were far more capable of hauling ass. The predominantly subterranean beasts were one of the few docile species of magical creatures, often employed as beasts of burden by both dwarves and gnomes since ages past. It should have come as no surprise, therefore, that the driver of the old tent on wheels was a dwarf, a relatively young male whose brown beard was barely even stubble. He had a full head of bushy hair and small, narrow eyes that looked as though they could barely see beyond his thick, round nose. His build as a whole could be described as pudgy, if one were feeling generous, or a ball with limbs, if they weren't. The dwarf turned his head lazily to shout towards the interior of the wagon.
We're almost at boot split, laddie! Thanks for the heads up, moron!
The ginger-haired elf sitting inside answered.
Oh, for the love of... It's morning! More none!
He enunciated.
Not his fault your parents picked such a lousy name,
the steel golem sitting next to the monster in disguise pointed out.
Yeah, tell me about it. Been thinking about having it changed, but I can't think of anything good.
How about moron? Boxy suggested.
It fits. Come now, lad. Is that any way to talk to someone graciously giving you a ride?
That's exactly why it fits,
Fizzy retorted internally. After all, he had to be a special kind of idiot to just pick up random hitchhikers without asking any questions. He hadn't even batted an eye at the fact that one of them was a self-aware golem and just said, "Hop on," without a care in the world. He could have at least shown a tiny bit of interest towards her situation, Fizzy pouted to herself. What was the point of working so hard on practicing her cover story if people weren't even going to bother asking her about it? Then again, judging from the contents of the cart, the guy wasn't exactly the sharpest tool in the shed. His luggage was strewn about haphazardly with no rhyme or reason. Crates of food, kegs of ale, several bundles of firewood and other useless meatbag accessories rattled loudly with every bump in the road. The least he could have done was tie them down so they wouldn't make such a racket. Fizzy wasn't even sure why they had bothered to hitch a ride in the first place. If it was about getting from point A to point B, then they could just as easily have kept going on foot. She could swear that they had been walking faster than these damned lime ticks were pulling the cart. Unfortunately, as slow and loud as it was, Boxy had said that it wanted to ride in the cart, which meant that they were riding in the stupid cart, even if Fizzy had no idea what had caused its sudden desire for social interaction. The actual reason was fairly simple. Although it also allowed it to practice its socializing, Boxy had honestly just wanted to ride in a carriage. Not only was it a new experience, but being inside a giant box with wheels helped to alleviate the vague sense of agoraphobia it felt as a result of not having its chesty shell. As for its familiars, Snack and Arms were following from a safe distance, keeping carefully out of sight. Boxy didn't particularly care for this arrangement, as it left it slightly more vulnerable, but sacrifices had to be made for the sake of camouflage.
"All right, we're here,"
Mornin informed them as the carriage ground to a halt.
"You two might want to get off and let the guards sign you in."
Boxy and Fizzy did as he suggested and stepped out of the wagon. Around them was a hilly, untamed wilderness of wild shrubs and patches of tall grass, with the odd tree dotting the landscape. A few fenced-off farms and ranches were visible in the distance, and directly in front of the cart was the entrance to a small town called Bootsplit, a primarily dwarven settlement. It may have seemed slightly out of place, considering this was the predominantly human Lodrak Empire, but dwarven settlements like Bootsplit were actually not all that uncommon. Historically speaking, humans had always profited immensely from trade with the dwarven kingdom of Horkensaft, which lay across the Oculus Sea to the northeast. The good relations meant that there were quite a few dwarven and gnomish immigrants living in the empire. The opposite was also true. Although humans living abroad rarely established their own communities, generally preferring to mingle with the native peoples, the same could also be said about the elves, to a certain degree. The only reason ethnically uniform places like Bootsplit even existed was due to cultural differences, as dwarves and gnomes placed great importance on family and heritage, often stating that their loyalty was to their clan first and their country second. The two races were also believed to be closely related, as the slightly taller and stouter dwarves and the nimbler, more quick-witted gnomes had lived together for millennia. Granted, it hadn't always been a peaceful coexistence, but it was inevitable that they would share certain traditions and beliefs. All things considered, Bootsplit wasn't really that odd. What was odd, however, was how utterly defenseless it appeared, despite its proximity to the Imperial Highway. Its perimeter was marked not by a sturdy wall, but a collection of wooden stakes that had been driven into the ground and tied together. It seemed more like a fence intended to keep out troublesome wild animals than a fortification to safeguard the populace against danger. The apparently lackluster defenses, however, were simply because they were all the town actually needed. Both the number and levels of the monsters along the Imperial Highway were typically extremely low, as the Empire made every effort to maintain a high level of security around its first-class road. The government often sent patrols to exterminate any monster nests or clear out bandits that may have posed a threat. Their security measures had intensified as of late, which lent credibility to the rumors that the Empire was gearing up for war with the elves to the north. After all, securing supply lines was the most basic of basics when it came to warfare. Boxy and Fizzy walked up to the guards, an intimidating pair of dwarves clad in extra-thick, pitch-black plate armor. Their helmets concealed their faces entirely, save for the braided beards that flowed from underneath their faceplates like hairy waterfalls. They carried shields roughly a meter and a half high, almost as tall as themselves, and each had a pair of short-handled war axes strapped to their waists.
"Who goes there?"
the guard on the left called, his voice slightly muffled.
"Oh, Mornin', was it?"
"Yeah, I'm back from my trip to the capital. I picked these folks up on the way back."
The guard glanced over at the stupidly smiling elf and the frowning, gnome-shaped golem, but didn't appear particularly surprised. Neither, after all, were particularly uncommon sights around Bootsplit. The elven border was relatively nearby, so they often had knife-ears passing through town, and both dwarves and gnomes often used golems for heavy lifting, though that was usually restricted to well-off merchants and nobles. The guards had therefore assumed that the sentient pile of steel was one of those, since she was simply standing quietly by her master's side rather than running around trying to stab people. Admittedly, using golems was a bit out of character for the tree huggers, but it was hardly worth raising a fuss over.
I see. So that's how it is,
the guard murmured as he turned around.
Hey, Lenny! Get your ass out here. You got work to do.
Oh, you're free to go in, Mornin,
said the other guard.
We'll take care of your mates here.
He was technically supposed to make the returnee go through an appraisal along with the others, but he didn't see the point since everyone knew everyone in the tightly knit community.
Thanks, lads. I'll be going ahead then.
The dwarf gave the reins a tug, prompting his lime ticks to head through the gap in the fence that appeared to serve as one of the city's gates.
All right then. What's your story, lad?
The first guard asked Boxy.
I'm headed north, past the border.
Ah, finally had enough of the humans, eh?
That's one way of putting it.
The guard grinned.
Can't blame you for wanting some time away. I don't have a problem with them myself, but I get why your folk might have some beef with them. To be honest, I'd much rather live in the capital, but my family decided to move out here for some damned reason. Pops is the head of the household, so what he says goes, you know.
Ugh, tell me about it.
Fizzy rolled her eyes.
People need to listen to their kids more often.
Yeah, I honestly don't... It can talk!
The guard practically shouted the last part, and his colleague seemed to share in his surprise.
Holy fuck! I've never seen a golem talk before. This thing must be a really high-class model. I will see. Now that I look at it, doesn't the steel skin seem particularly sturdy? I mean, I'm no blacksmith, but I know good metal when I see it.
Rather than being distressed or suspicious, however, they actually seemed genuinely impressed.
Oh? Well, I suppose even plebeians like you are capable of recognizing my greatness.
Fizzy was greatly enjoying the attention, so she allowed the guards to continue praising her to their heart's content. The dwarves continued to remark on the beauty of her steel frame and apparent sturdy construction until a third arrived on the scene. This one was much older, much balder, and dressed in light, clean clothes rather than armor.
Oi, Lenny! Check this out!
One of the guards pointed.
A talking golem! Fools exist!
The newcomer exclaimed.
I most certainly do,
Fizzy stated, more than a hint of pride in her voice.
Fascinating! He exclaimed, stroking his waist-length white beard. I must say, the way your facial expression moves is extremely lifelike, and your torso is so natural and well-detailed, it looks more like a wild golem's than one produced in a workshop. The level of detail around the belly button and the nipples is particularly excellent.
Nipples?
Fizzy looked down at herself. As expected, her rude right hand had begun stripping without her notice yet again. However, she found herself hesitant to cover up. What she felt from their stares and incredulous words wasn't embarrassment, but a sense of accomplished fulfillment. The golem genuinely felt like leaving her girls permanently exposed might not be such a bad idea. One couldn't appreciate a work of art if it was covered up, right?
No!
She blurted, hurriedly putting her clothes back on. That was dangerous. She had almost become a shameless pervert like a certain succubus. Besides, running around naked would be an overall inconvenience to Boxy. While unclothed personal golems weren't exactly illegal in gnomish and dwarven society, they were generally frowned upon, especially if they happened to be... anatomically correct.
Say, laddie, Lenny turned towards the elf. How do you keep her so shiny? That steel's luster makes it seem like she's practically brand new. Do you use some special oil or cleaning fluid?
No, Boxy answered. I just lick her.
The three dwarves stared in stunned silence, attempting to process that particular bit of information along with all of its implications.
You... lick her?
Lenny asked.
Yes.
Like, with your tongue?
Yes.
All of her?
Yes.
Is it really that strange?
Fizzy asked.
Using spit to clean stains is a bit crude, but everyone does it now and then, especially when access to running water is limited.
Stains?
Oh, yeah. I get covered in bodily fluids almost every day, so it's best to get them off before they dry and get all crusty.
All three dwarves silently reached the same conclusion. The elf was a total deviant. They had no idea that the bodily fluids Fizzy was referring to were the brains, blood, and bile that splattered all over her during a fight. Having her glorious steel frame covered in meatbag juices was not something she particularly enjoyed.
Ahem.
Lenny cleared his throat, clearly intending to get as far away from the topic as quickly as dwarvenly possible.
Now then, I'll be performing the basic appraisal to verify your identity. Any objections?
None,
Boxy replied with a smile. This sort of thing was common practice when entering a town or a city for the first time, so it had prepared in advance. Still, this would be the first real test of the fake status screen that it had created with its essence concealment skill, so Boxy couldn't help but feel a bit on edge. It was ready to toss Fizzy into its storage and make a run for it if something went wrong and its true identity was discovered.
All right, then hold out your right hand and... Wait, when's the last time you washed it?
Been on the road, so... I don't know. Does that matter?
No, I guess not.
Lenny somewhat hesitantly grasped the elf's palm as though they were shaking hands, making a mental note to scrub it down with soap afterwards.
Basic appraisal,
he chanted. Unlike a full appraisal, which could only be performed once a day, a basic appraisal could be done as often as the scribe wished, although the information gathered was quite incomplete. It was unable to gauge skills, attributes, or perks, but that data wasn't necessary to perform the mandatory security check.
Name's Chester Underwood,
Lenny recited the information scrolling through his head.
Male elf, aged 17. Only job is warlock at level 25. No guild affiliation.
He pulled a ledger from the large bag strapped over his shoulder and began to leaf through the pages. After first confirming that Chester Underwood was not on the list of wanted criminals, he proceeded to mechanically copy the details onto the paper. Once he was done, he purged the basic appraisal's results from his mind and turned his attention back to the odd visitor.
How long will you be staying in town, Mr. Underwood?
A few days at most.
Just passing through on your way to the border?
Yes.
Lenny wrote down the time and date of Chester's visit, as well as the visitor's responses to his questions.
And what will you be doing while you're in town?
Resting and buying supplies for the trip. Might do a few quests at the Mercenary Guild.
That comment caused the dwarf's quill to come to an abrupt halt, and he stared sternly at the stranger.
This is a peaceful and honorable community, son. Those vultures do not have a presence here.
Oh. Never mind, then.
Lenny scribbled in a few final notes before putting away his ledger.
All right, Mr. Underwood. Thank you for your cooperation. Enjoy your stay in Boot Split.
No appraisal for the golem?
It couldn't help but ask.
This is your personal golem, right?
Yes.
Then there's no problem.
As far as the law was concerned, personal golems were classified as equipment, so unless someone reported one stolen or gone rogue, there was no reason to bother. Lenny was awfully curious as to where this youngster might have gotten such a fine piece of steel, but knew better than to pry into an adventurer's personal background. It was bound to be some embellished, long-winded tale with any unflattering details removed in order to make the person telling it look good. Lenny had heard his fair share of such stories, so he opted to save everyone the trouble and pass on being subjected to another one. Incidentally, the old dwarf's intuition was spot on. The story Fizzy had prepared to explain her origins was nothing less than a steaming pile of utter bullshit.
I have another question,
Boxy continued.
Do you know of any warlock guilds in town?
The elderly dwarf blinked in surprise.
Thought you were headed up north.
So?
You know all guilds in town are affiliated with the Empire, right? They don't have branch offices across the border.
Planning to join a guild just before leaving the country seemed awfully odd, to say the least. People rarely changed guilds after they'd joined, and the few who did were often treated like second-rate adventurers. After all, guilds invested in their members by offering training, specialized equipment, and valuable information at very reasonable rates. One of their own jumping ship to take up with a competitor was more often than not considered a form of betrayal. Either that, or they were incompetent and had needed to be kicked out. But neither option bode well for the person's reputation.
"I just want to advance my job," Boxy added. "I'm not interested in joining full-time. I hate politics."
Zira had prepared this particular response for her master beforehand, as freelance adventurers often showed up requesting job advancement, and the various guilds were more than happy to take their gold. Provided that the wanderers subjected themselves to a full appraisal, of course.
"Ah, so that's how it is. Well, the Order of the Black Wand has an office on the west side of town, near the Market Plaza. Try there."
"I see. Thank you."
The young elf walked briskly into town, his pet golem following obediently behind.
"Hey, Lenny,"
one of the guards spoke up.
"You said he had no guild affiliation, right?"
"Yeah, so?"
"The shoulder patch on that guy's robes belongs to a guild called the Brotherhood of the Third Eye."
"You're sure of this?"
"Pretty sure, aye. Maybe he got kicked out or something,"
the second guard joined in.
"He did say something about politics, and you know how rowdy disputes between adventurers can get."
"I don't know. That doesn't seem right."
The first scratched his head.
"The Brotherhood is a pretty small guild. Bunch of local boys, you know. They don't have the luxury of just kicking people out over trivial stuff like the big ones do."
"You sure know a lot about an obscure organization like that, eh?"
Lenny couldn't help but ask.
"I mean, I've never even heard of them until just now."
"Well, one of my drinking buddies used to be a member before he retired. He likes to ramble about his glory days, so a lot of the details stuck with me."
"Want me to call that guy back so we can question him more thoroughly?"
the second guard suggested.
"Don't do anything unnecessary," Lenny stopped him. "It's not illegal to change guilds, just unusual. Besides, something tells me that lad has had it rough. You don't become like that unless you've been through something terrible."
The other two nodded. Anyone who willingly revealed that they liked to cover their golem with their bodily fluids and then lick them off was undoubtedly not quite right in the head.
"Still, I think I'll make a note of it, just in case."
Lenny opened the ledger back up and flipped to the entry for Chester Underwood, adding, "possible former member of Brotherhood of Third Eye," in the space reserved for comments and observation.
"Oh, damn," muttered the scribe. "I messed up when writing the guy's details earlier. Guess I was a bit distracted."
He crossed out a word in the ledger, scribbling an amendment in the margin above.
"You're sure about that?"
one of the guards asked doubtfully.
"Shouldn't you redo the appraisal if you messed up?"
"No, it's fine. Just a slip of the hand, I suppose. That's what I get for doing my job sober."
He put the ledger away with a chuckle.
"After all, there's no way the appraisal actually said he was 17 fish old."
Part 4. Boxy headed into the branch office of the Order of the Black Wand. With 3 floors, it was one of the larger buildings in town, although the interior was still on the cramped side. Overall, it looked to have considerably less total floor space than the 2-story mercenary guild back in Rosa. Though this was only natural, as the town had barely 4,500 people living in it. An outlandishly large building in such a lowly populated place would be pretty pointless. And the 3 guilds back in Koran had basically been operating out of old houses, so this was pretty extravagant by comparison. It wasn't just its size, either. The waiting area immediately beyond the entrance was lavishly decorated, with an air of dignity and class. Plush carpeting lined the entrance and led to the reception desks some 8 meters away, while magical lights adorned the walls and ceiling, making the space just bright enough to not be unpleasant despite the lack of windows. The walls were hung with paintings and portraits, and a pair of banners hung like tapestries, bearing the white-on-black guild crest, a stylized fist gripping a wand, framed on either side by an arcane symbol. Furniture-wise, the place was rather barren. There were a few benches lining the walls and two elevated desks with dwarven clerks sitting behind them, but that was really it. A quest board was visible on the far wall directly between the aforementioned desks, and a total of 6 people waited in line at the counters, each dressed in cloaks and robes of various dark colors. The Order of the Black Wand was one of the largest caster guilds in the country, so it made sense that most of their clientele would be of a mystical persuasion. The organization was also known for handling magical matters of questionable repute, so they predominantly dealt with warlocks and necromancers. Not exclusively, though, as they also counted wizards, alchemists, and rogues alike among their specialists. But Boxy didn't give much of a damn about any of that. All it wanted was to finally get its warlock job past level 25. However, it was having some difficulty determining which queue it needed to line up at. The one on the left had a brass signpost stamped with the image of a stack of coins with a rather long word underneath. Looking more closely at the woman at the front of the line, she seemed to be trying to haggle with the clerk about a member's discount of some sort. Judging by what little Boxy knew about guilds, it determined that that was the requisitions office, a fancy way of saying guild shop. Not where one might inquire about less material services. The queue on the right was far more promising. Its signpost was decorated with the image of a quill and parchment, implying that it was the administration desk, and what Boxy needed right now was to have someone administer a job advancement, so it immediately got in line to the right. Immediately in front of Boxy was a male gnome draped in a black, hooded cloak who looked to be around Fizzy's age. His face wasn't visible from the back, but the former mimic's magical perception told it that there were some nasty burn marks on his right cheek and temple. But far more interesting than the gnome was the thing floating directly above him. It was a spherical creature about a meter in diameter, with bright red, almost pink, skin covered in considerable bumps and wrinkles. It had one massive purple eye in the middle of its face, underneath which was a large mouth filled with needle-like teeth. 10 tendril-like eye stalks waved from the top, sides, and back of its head, almost like errant strands of hair, and each eyeball a different color. Boxy's demonology skill identified the creature as a beholder, one most likely bound to the gnome. According to the lore, beholders were demons whose main purpose was not combat, but gathering information through observation. They loved hoarding secrets and knowledge, and typically avoided sharing what they knew. That didn't mean that they couldn't fight, however. Their offensive capabilities may have been lacking, but the various types of eye beams that they could fire were capable of weakening their target or making them vulnerable to specific elements. They could also erect magical barriers in order to protect their masters, although they generally had to be specifically ordered to do so. Beholders were, like all demons, fickle and selfish creatures that would have loved nothing more than to see their summoner perish so that they could roam the mortal plane freely. Boxy stared unabashedly at the beholder as it called up everything it knew about the species. This was only the second time the mimic had seen a demon other than one of its familiars up close, the first being Punchy, of course. Overcome with curiosity, it probed at the creature's insides with its magically enhanced senses, eager to see how it was put together. As expected, there were barely any internal organs, as most of the body mass was just thick muscle and skull bones. The only things of note were a brain smaller than it would have imagined, a disc-shaped organ at the roof of its mouth, and an odd body part that looked like 3 hourglasses joined at the middle. Come to think of it, that seemed oddly familiar, especially the way those flesh nodules pulsed and spun. It took a few moments, but Boxy eventually realized that the thing was the beholder's own mana locator gland, one far more advanced than even a mimic's. And the fact that the shapeshifter could see the gland meant that the demon could do the same. In fact, judging by the way the beholder silently turned in midair to stare at Boxy with all 11 eyes, it had most definitely noticed something amiss.
Well, well, well. What have we here?
The demon spoke directly into Boxy's mind with the voice of an old man, hinting at centuries worth of wisdom. The shapeshifter could also feel a slight disturbance in the manner around it, probably the beholder analyzing its body in some way. This was, to put it mildly, not a very tasty situation.
"How quaint," the demon exclaimed telepathically. "A doppelganger."
Correction. This was almost as untasty as the situation could get.
"I haven't seen one of your kind in centuries. I do so miss the secrecy and conspiracies you lot used to inspire. A pity, really."
Oddly enough, the demon actually sounded jovial and intrigued rather than suspicious. Shouldn't he have alerted his master that there was a monster literally standing behind him?
"Do not fret, young one,"
he reassured the ex-mimic.
"I have no intention of ratting you out to that pathetic gnome. Just the opposite, in fact. I'm rather looking forward to seeing what you intend to do in here."
And now Boxy just felt silly. It had literally just been musing on the fact demons did not care anything for mortal lives, least of all their masters. There had been no reason to think that this one would be any different. Forget warning the gnome. The beholder was far more likely to simply ask it to gut the fool and leave him unshackled.
"I'm sure you won't mind if I just quietly observe, no?"
The fake elf shook its head lightly in response. If the demon was content to merely analyze its body for the sake of his own curiosity, then Boxy really had no reason to decline. It did, however, have a very good reason not to decline, as it was likely that the beholder would rat it out if he wasn't allowed to do as he wanted. Boxy was confident that it could escape if it came to that, but it didn't want to ruin its chance to finally further its warlock job by causing an unnecessary ruckus.
"What gland you have there?" the demon inquired. "It's not something typically found in doppelgangers, yes?"
Boxy shook its head.
"The shape and size look familiar. That's a mimic's mana locator gland, is it not?"
The shapeshifter answered with a slight nod.
"Interesting. Are you perchance one of Tal Saroth's original creations?"
Boxy had no idea who that was, but considering that it was just one of many mimics born within a low-level dungeon, the answer to that was a firm no.
"Could it be a ranked-up mimic?"
The shapeshifter nodded once again, much to the beholder's delight.
"How unusual. And you're in this place. Then that means... oh, I see. So that's how it is. Whoa. Ha ha! Ha ha!
The demon bared his fangs, smiling viciously at the elf. His head bobbed slightly as he laughed.
"Thrummit!"
the gnome whispered angrily.
"I told you not to bother anyone in here!"
Though that had indeed been his instruction, Boxy hadn't been in the building when the order had been given, meaning that there was technically nothing to prevent Thrummit from alleviating his boredom by bothering the creature.
"Face the front and close your mouth!"
The demon rolled his near dozen eyes and turned to face the front.
"Sorry if he creeped you out,"
the shorter man apologized.
"These ancient ones, they're a pain in the ass to keep in line sometimes. No worries, it happens."
Of course, Boxy didn't mind. Quite the contrary, it was relieved that its cover seemed to still be intact for the moment. It had, after all, done nothing to earn the demon's spite, and it wasn't in Thrummit's nature to reveal a secret willingly. That aside, it was actually rather thankful to the demon, as the conversation had revealed a glaring flaw in its disguise. Namely, that it was only skin deep. While Boxy hadn't been able to alter its internal organs as a simple chest mimic, doppelgangers had no such restrictions. They only needed to ensure that their spine remained intact and that they had lungs to breathe with, but other than that, almost everything was fair game.
There was nothing stopping Boxy from looking like an elf both inside and out, other than its lack of experience creating internal anatomy. It was confident that it could put up a convincing facade with some practice, though. Elf bodies were almost identical to those of humans, after all, other than a few key differences such as their hearts being located on the right sides of their bodies instead of the left. And if there was one thing Boxy T. Morningwood knew, it was human anatomy. Having made a mental note to work on internal organs later, the shapeshifter moved on to pondering the root cause of the issue. It had grown complacent, thanks to its ability to easily bypass appraisals and the powerful yet flexible new body it had obtained. The events leading up to its capture had taught it the painful lesson that weeks of deception could easily come unraveled with a single slip-up. Plots, months, or even years in the making could be undone in an instant if it wasn't careful. If it was planning to infiltrate enlightened society for any extended period of time, then the first thing that it needed to practice was not shapeshifting or social skills, but vigilance. It started working on that right away, double-checking the fake status that its essence concealment was currently broadcasting. Thanks to that, it finally realized that it had accidentally put its fake age as 17 fish, a leftover from when it had been trying out the limits and flexibility of the skill. If it wasn't for the gatekeeper's robotic attitude while checking its status, it was unlikely that it would have even gotten past the gates. Boxy quickly corrected it to 17 years and turned its attention to the other problem it had spotted. Specifically, the eye-shaped insignia on its right shoulder. It hadn't thought much of it initially, but Boxy now realized that most of the people here bore the Order's crest on their clothes, which was distinctly different from its own. It wasn't sure if this would be a problem, but it knew just who to ask.
Snack!
It had told its familiars to hide themselves somewhere beyond the town's borders, just in case something happened and it needed backup.
What is it, Master?
Zira replied.
Did something happen?
Everyone in this guild has the same thing on their shoulder. It doesn't match mine.
You mean the guild crest?
I guess.
Not an issue. Just say you left your old guild due to personal reasons and you should be fine. Oh, and try to sound evasive when you say that.
Ah. What was that guild called again?
Brotherhood of the Third Eye, Master.
That's a strange name.
Is it?
Zira asked dubiously.
I think it's a pretty good one, to be honest. Definitely better than Order of the Black Wand, at least.
The shapeshifter supposed that there was no accounting for taste. Although...
But what about the other two?
Other two what?
Isn't there a Brotherhood of the First Eye Master, and one for the Second Eye Master? What if there's a fourth?
The succubus sighed through the thought link.
No, Master. That last part was me addressing you. The guild is called the Brotherhood of the Third Eye.
Oh. That makes even less sense.
Humans, elves, and the like had only two eyes. So why would they need an organization dedicated to a non-existent third one? Were they trying to grow such a thing, perhaps? If that was the case, they should have been the Brotherhood of the Second Heart. That sounded much tastier.
Next?
The blonde clerk at the front shouted for the next in line, breaking the creature away from its fantasies. The gnome and its beholder familiar stepped up to the now empty counter. They spoke briefly about making some kind of appointment, which caused the gnome to become rather irate when it became clear that the person he was looking for had left town the day before. He muttered a few unkind words before leaving in a huff, Thrummit shooting Boxy a final pleading look that seemed to say, "Please kill this idiot," as he floated by. The shapeshifter pretended not to notice.
Next!
Hello.
The not-elf took a few steps forward, greeting the elven clerk cheerfully. The monster was inwardly glad that the receptionist wasn't human. Otherwise, its Butcher of Humanity perk would have made things... difficult.
Hello there, sir,
she replied with a bright smile to match Boxy's.
What can I help you with?
I need to see a warlock trainer.
Of course. I will need to confirm a few things. Are you a member of the Order of the Black Wand?
No.
Do you have any current guild affiliations?
No.
What about past guild affiliations?
Yes.
Which are?
Ah, the Brotherhood of the Third Eye.
Boxy added, showing her its shoulder patch.
I had to leave due to personal reasons.
I understand completely, sir,
she nodded.
Those humans can be quite insufferable sometimes, can't they?
Indeed.
As expected, Snack's advice allowed things to go much more smoothly than they would have if it had tried to bumble its way through the interaction by itself.
Would you be interested in joining our guild instead?
The clerk offered.
I can't vouch for other branch offices, but I personally guarantee that we do not tolerate discrimination here, be it racial, sexual, or occupational.
No, thank you.
As you wish, sir. Moving on, I need to inform you that a full appraisal will be mandatory before we can perform any kind of job training. Is that all right?
Yes.
Good. And lastly, what sort of warlock training do you need?
I need to get past level 25.
Well, you're in luck, sir. We have a trainer available right now, but we need to discuss the 500 GP training fee before we can proceed.
Boxy hesitated. It hadn't been stupid enough to think that the service was going to be free, but it hadn't expected the fee to be quite so steep. Even if they did hike the price up for non-guild members, this felt like a bit much. The receptionist seemed to notice its dilemma and was quick to reassure the potential client.
I understand that it seems a bit expensive, but please understand that finding a level 50 warlock who also has a level 4 mentor skill is rather difficult around these parts. The individual I will be referring you to is also a scribe, so he is perfectly capable of performing the appraisal as well.
She had a point, though not in the way she probably thought. Boxy didn't exactly have a lot of options at present, nor did it feel like hunting for them, so it decided to take the financial hit and get this over with.
Okay, I'll pay.
It reached inside its robes and pulled out the heavy coin pouch it had prepared beforehand. Counting out exactly 500 GP worth of coins, it placed them on the counter in front of the goggle-eyed clerk. She had been about to suggest some sort of loan or payment plan, since she certainly hadn't expected a young lad to be carrying that much gold. Her experienced eyes told her that there was at least 4, maybe 5 times that amount remaining in the pouch. Not the sort of wealth one would expect a random youngster to have access to.
One moment, please.
Recovering from the mild shock, she scooped up the coins, storing them away in the strong box behind the counter. She pulled out a small scrap of paper with a few markings on it and scribbled down some letters and numbers. When she was done, she stamped the parchment with the seal of the Order of the Black Wand and handed it to her client.
Here you go, sir. Just head through the door on your right and enter the third office on the left. Show this ticket to the bearded gentleman inside and he'll handle the rest.
I see,
Boxy said, eyeing the door in question.
Is there anything else you will be needing today?
This trainer is a scribe?
He is indeed.
The clerk nodded once again.
Could he appraise a magic item for me?
Boxy was eager to find out the exact properties of the fancy staff it had picked up in the Spire of the Jade King. That was why it had covertly brought it out from its storage and was currently carrying it in a sturdy shoulder sling. It had wrapped the item in a white sheet so as to not draw too much attention to its clearly demonic ornamental skull.
Of course, although that will be a separate charge of 25 GP.
At least that was more reasonable. Boxy promptly paid and was given another scrap of paper covered with a bunch of numbers and letters that seemed like gibberish, much like the first one. It was probably some code or shorthand that only the guild's employees knew. It thanked the woman and moved through the doorway she had pointed out. The hallway beyond was far less extravagant than the lobby. The walls were bare, save for a number of doors, ending in a decrepit-looking staircase. As Boxy proceeded down the passage, it noticed that there was a plaque with some kind of engraved lettering on each door. It couldn't read what they said, but it could count well enough to know which door was the third on the left. Having arrived at its destination, it placed a hand on the handle before remembering one of Snack's basic lessons in etiquette. Mindful of its training, it therefore knocked first.
Come in!
A dignified, though slightly muffled, voice came from within, prompting Boxy to enter the tiny yet tidy office. Its only occupant was a gray-bearded dwarf sitting behind a desk in the corner of the room.
He wore crisp-looking black robes and a sleek wooden staff tipped with a golden crystal rested against the wall behind him.
"Good day, laddie," he offered in greeting. "Name's Grimebeard, and no, it's not contagious."
The dwarf chuckled lightly, his voice oddly vigorous for someone so wrinkled. Boxy momentarily wondered if it had stumbled onto another Edward, but the rough cough the man's laughter devolved into said otherwise.
Sorry about that. So, what can I do for you?
Yes, hello,
the fake elf returned the greeting.
I'm Chester, and I'm here for some training and an item appraisal.
It handed Grimebeard the slips of paper the receptionist had given it. The old warlock looked them over, nodded firmly, and put them away in one of his desk drawers. He stood, stepping closer to Chester, before gesturing at the empty chair in front of his desk.
Have a seat, and we'll get started.
Boxy wasn't quite sure why sitting was strictly necessary, but it did as instructed and parked its rump on the plain wooden stool, putting the two of them at equal eye level. Grimebeard moved a bit closer and placed a hand on its forehead, which he certainly couldn't have done comfortably if the taller elf hadn't taken a seat.
Full appraisal!
Boxy was expecting to feel the same skin-crawling sensation it had experienced when it had been in captivity, but nothing of the sort happened. It instead felt the odd sensation of something inside itching a bit, signifying that the invasive full appraisal had been safely redirected to the smokescreen set up by Essence Concealment. The divine boon showed Grimebeard a level 25 warlock with a rather unbalanced but still perfectly reasonable set of attributes and skills. That said, the old scribe couldn't help but want to lecture the youngster. Summon familiar, power overwhelming, demonology, and crystallized magic were not what he would personally call wise skill choices, as none of them could protect their wielder from harm. One could argue that having up to 3 familiars for bodyguards would provide excellent protection, but Grimebeard was of the mind that demons caused more harm than good. He would have gladly given the foolish youth a lecture on the matter, but skill counseling wasn't what the elf had come to his office for. Not to mention that he was a guildless freelancer, and they rarely listened to what anyone else had to say.
Right, good enough. Just give me a sec here.
The dwarf walked back to his desk and quickly jotted down the details of the full appraisal, including the attributes and skill composition and noting the apparent lack of perks. He walked back to where Boxy was sitting and lightly gripped its head once more, this time with both hands.
Job advancement! Warlock!
A pale blue light engulfed the dwarf, flowing through his arms and pouring into the shapeshifter's head. The maximum level of your warlock job has increased to 50. The maximum level of your ruin mastery skill has increased to 15. The maximum level of your domination mastery skill has increased to 15. This was where Boxy had expected the notifications to end, but its consciousness was suddenly flooded by a string of level up messages punctuated with a rather interesting update. Congratulations! You are now a level 34 warlock. Intelligence plus 18. Mental fortitude plus 18. Endurance plus 18. You have learned a new spell, True Darkness. You have learned a new spell, Massive Rejection.
What?
It said aloud.
Hmm? Something wrong, laddie?
It was debatable whether wrong was the correct word, but if anyone would know what this was about, it would be a warlock teacher.
I just gained a bunch of job levels out of nowhere. Is that normal?
Ah, yeah. That happens sometimes. Your job keeps gathering XP even if it's capped out,
Grimebeard explained.
It's not that strange to gain 1 or 2 levels after the cap gets raised if you've been putting it off for a long while.
Oh, that's pretty convenient.
Eh, not really. Even if it keeps accumulating, the XP you get this way is hugely reduced. You'd probably have gained at 2 or 3 times the number of levels by now if you had advanced your job right away.
The dwarf didn't mind explaining for free since the information was directly related to the elf's request. That, and he wouldn't be able to call himself a teacher if he didn't do something to alleviate the boy's criminal cluelessness.
I see. Thank you.
You're welcome, laddie.
So, let's see this magic item you brought.
Boxy stood, unwrapping the staff on its back to present it to the dwarf. Grimebeard stared, wide-eyed, unable to contain his shock at what was clearly a staff of considerable power. He reached out a trembling hand and placed it on the handle.
Identify. Appraise item. Detect enchant, he chanted, his voice quivering.
The staff's information flowed into his mind, a strange glint appearing in his eye as he smiled at the disguised shapeshifter. He opened his mouth, but the young Mr. Underwood spoke before he could.
Bad things will happen if you lie to me, old man.
The poorly veiled threat immediately halted the dwarf's train of thought. He bit back his words and admitted to himself that this dopey kid was sharper than he looked. The dwarf had been about to try to deceive him that this was merely a decorative walking stick, not even a caster's staff, and then offer to buy it for a good price. But his little scheme had been foiled before he could even attempt the cheat. The guild was sure to have his ass on a platter if he was caught falsifying appraisal results again, and he couldn't just attack a client in broad daylight and hope to get away with it. He decided to change his approach.
I wouldn't dream of it, laddie, he exclaimed,
taking his hand off the staff.
I was just shocked, since it is quite the excellent item. Here, let me write the details down for you.
The dwarf hurriedly returned to his desk and pulled out a form of some kind, writing down the staff's information. Boxy carefully observed him as he did so, keeping watch for any more suspicious behavior. It may have been oblivious when it came to matters of social interaction, but it was an expert in the field of greed, and certainly hadn't failed to notice the way the dwarf was blatantly coveting its fancy staff. Even if it wasn't particularly shiny, it was still the shapeshifter's property, which meant that anyone who dared to lay a finger on it would have their face eaten. It was debating doing that anyway, but, much like his would-be victim, realized that this was neither the time nor the place for violence. Once Grimebeard was done, he handed the sheet of paper to Boxy, who glanced it over while nodding to itself.
Yep. Can't read a single word of it.
Its ability to read and write was still practically non-existent, so it simply rolled up the appraisal results and stowed them inside its robes. Snack or Fizzy should be able to tell it what the paper said, although its validity was obviously questionable. Boxy hadn't even been planning to have the staff appraised here, but it had seen the opportunity and taken it, much to its regret. Deciding it would be good to get a second opinion, it rewrapped the clearly valuable item, slung it over its shoulder, and proceeded to leave the building. Grimebeard sat in silence for about a minute after the door to his office slammed shut. Once he had made sure that the elf was gone and that nobody was listening in, he reached under his desk, pulling out a crystalline blue cube about 8 centimeters on all sides. He tapped the topmost side 3 times, and it flashed in response. He brought it up to his face and started whispering into it.
Ireta, Chosoros, Ilimas, Crocara, Rhombas, Epiporia, Efurte, Mikon.
Having received the correct keywords, the cube flashed again, and its insides flickered to life. It kept blinking for several seconds before projecting a slightly transparent 3-dimensional image directly in front of Grimebeard's face. It took a few moments for the hologram to stabilize, whereupon it took the form of a hooded head and shoulders.
You're contacting us way ahead of schedule.
The words that came from the cube were slightly distorted, but nevertheless understandable.
I know. But I have an urgent job for you, one that both of us are bound to profit from.
After all, it wasn't every day that an artifact-grade item crossed Grimebeard's desk, and he wasn't about to let some snot-nosed runt run off with it so easily. Part 5. Boxy, still under the guise of Chester Underwood, strode through the heavy doors of the Boot-Split Craftsmen's Union. It was an artisan's guild, the local flavor of the organization that Fizzy still technically belonged to. Most towns and cities within the Lodrak Empire had one of these unions,
but they weren't structured in the same way as the Order of the Black Wand. Rather than a singular entity with multiple branch offices, they were instead a collection of fully autonomous guilds that worked closely together. This was necessary because every region and settlement had its own specialty goods and products, not to mention the difference in available raw materials and trade routes. It was far easier to have each division regulate themselves and make their own guild policies than have a central authority handling administration for the entire country. Adventurer guilds like the Order of the Mercenary Guild could get away with it because their members tended to travel a lot, and having a certain standard and sense of familiarity was important to them. Artisans, on the other hand, rarely moved shop once they had established themselves, so their only concerns were local connections and services. None of that mattered to Boxy, however. It was neither an adventurer nor an artisan. The most accurate term to sum up its occupation would be murder hobo. However, it did have things that it wanted appraised, and this was the best place for it. The only reason it had even attempted to do that at the Order was because the opportunity had presented itself. It was slightly regretting ignoring Fizzy's warning that the Order of the Black Wand was full of shady and untrustworthy people, but, in Boxy's defense, it was fairly shady and untrustworthy itself.